of Barack Obama, our first African-American president, his willingness to tackle some of these issues, the ramifications of which and the theory behind which he clearly understands.
Yes, 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 yes. You know, and that was, you know, it's funny. I published the pitch note when I was first putting this together. And at the time, you know, I was saying, well, maybe Barack Obama should say something about this. I've since changed my mind. I don't think he should say absolutely anything, you know, about it. I think the president is in a very unique position as the first African-American president. I think that, you know, shrinks the amount of, you know, things he can and can't say. That does not mean, you know, that one should not be critical. You know, I've definitely been critical. I think some of his rhetoric around culture and the culture of polity is deeply, deeply misguided and is, you know, erroneous and wrong. You know, having said that, you know, it's not my expectation that, you know, President Obama will come out tomorrow in support of reparations. And I don't even think that's the way it should work. My hope, if anything, my hope would be that, A, other writers will take this on and they won't just look at it from a housing perspective. My hope is that they'll look at it from a criminal justice perspective, which is, you know, another way I think this article could be written. From an education perspective, from a healthcare, there are all sorts of ways that you could look at, you know, the dynamic of reparations. And then after that, that we'll have some sort of groundswell in the country that will build up a movement. Politicians respond to pressure. And I think that's what needs to happen. This is a long, long fight. This is not something that, you know, is supposed to be won next year or even, you know, before Barack Obama leaves office.
Ta-Nehisi Coates will link to the cover story for The Atlantic called The Case for Reparations, as well as part one of our interview with him at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. tomorrow, May 31st, Saturday at 2 o'clock. Hope to see folks there.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting right after this.
This single independent radio station is searching for the 10x10 pop-up of our dreams. Must love travel, the outdoors, music festivals, and live remote radio broadcasts. If you can spare the canvas structure we're craving, call us at 503-231-8732 to donate today. Run away with us to our community radio station, KBOO.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Thank you. And good morning, good morning. It is 5 minutes after the hour of 8 a.m., and you are tuned to your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And together we are, in fact, Positively Revolting. And we hope you are, too. This morning, we will be talking about violence against women in all of its permutations. It's yet one more discussion that we turn our attentions to, the fact that even now, even today, whoops, we still have this glaring societal issue.
And does not seem to have turned the corner quite yet.
No matter how much we talk about it.
Imagine that.
As if talking about it would end it. And yet there is a component, right? Because, in fact, violence against women is so pervasive in our culture that we tend to gloss over it. We tend to look at it as the water we swim in, because it is, in fact, a part of our culture. And we have talked about rape culture before. We've talked about the culture of dominance. We've talked about the oppression based on gender perception or gender identity. And now we need to do it again, because, in fact, you know, the problem hasn't gone away, strangely. And just to let people know, this is, in fact, the last Positively Revolting that we'll be producing for about 3 months. Lynn and I will be back in September.
We're taking a summer vacation.
But we're having our first summer vacation since we got out of high school. So let's just say that was a long time ago. So let's go ahead and look for a moment about, look at what our culture is, and let's look at what it means to actually say we live in rape culture.
Do you mean?
It's a phrase that gets thrown around, and in fact, people that don't understand it go, what are you talking about? No one approves of rape. Except culturally, it's all around us. So let's look a little bit at that. Rape culture tells women not to walk alone at night. Rape culture asks a woman who has survived rape if she was intoxicated, or if she'd gone out on a date with her rapist, or if she'd had some sort of prior relationship with her rapist, if perhaps she didn't give her rapist the wrong idea. Rape culture asks if a woman fought back. Then it judges her if she didn't. Obviously, she really must have wanted it. Otherwise, she would have fought back. Or if she did fight back and gets hurt or killed, it was her fault. She shouldn't have fought back. She should have just accepted it. It would have gone easier. There's judgment either way.
Or she wore the wrong clothes.
Rape culture tells women that self-defense is the way to stop rape. It does not tell men that they need to recognize what rape is, that they need to talk to their brothers about what rape is, that it is, in fact, their responsibility to be accountable for their own actions. Rape culture enforces patriarchy by underscoring traditional gender roles. It invokes rape as a punishment if a woman steps too far out of line. I know in my particular history, I was raped by a friend. I'm using scare quotes on the air, right? Who, upon hearing that I was thinking perhaps I was a lesbian, he was going to prove to me, in fact, that I was not. That is rape as punishment for stepping too far out of line. Rape culture depends on the silence of women and complicity of men for its continuance. And I just want to be clear that men have a unique role in ending rape culture by making it clear to their friends, their colleagues, their sons, their fathers, their brothers, all, that it is never acceptable to coerce, force, trick, or drug a woman into sex. Coercion includes feelings of guilt. Let's say that. So that's a little bit about the water we swim in, a little bit about how things are framed so that women, in fact, get the blame for violence against ourselves. That is a part of rape culture.
I look at Lynn. Follow that up with.
I look at Lynn for the handoff and. She's just sort of got her head on the table and is looking like she wants to go back to bed now. It's hard stuff to talk about. And the thing is that it relies, violence against women very much relies on our silence. And that is the reason why Lynn suggested we actually talk about it again, because our silence makes it invisible.
Well, and so much has come up in the last week or so. I love Rebecca Solnit, who is a feminist author. Her latest book is, I believe, Things Men Tell Me Things or Men Explain Things. And she was on Democracy Now! Earlier this week. And one of the things that she talked about the latest incident in San Diego, and I don't want to give that the fellow, the crazy person who did that, quite as much attention, though it needs to be talked about, but she's talking about the violence, and she says, I think this is part of a toxic brew in our culture right now that includes modeling masculinity and maleness as extremely as violence, as domination, as entitlement, as control, and women as worthless, as disposable, as things men have the right to control, etc. And, you know, as well as one of those sad things that he seemed to have an incredibly conventional ideas about what constituted happiness and well-being and his entitlement to them. He seemed to have no resources, no models of alternative ways to meet your needs to be happy, to connect with human beings. So all that needs to be addressed, particularly the violence against women, which is a huge epidemic in the country right now. And I liked, people haven't talked about the sort of, I don't know, we talked to Michael Mead a couple of weeks ago, and this reminds me of that, the lack of imagination in this culture of violence. That these are old, really old ways of looking at human relationships. There is nothing new, and it's odd to me because I don't hang out with men like that. I don't have to work with men that are trying to. I loved Rebecca Solnit talking about the reason she titled her book what she did is because some guy was telling her that she should read this book, and it was a book she had written. But she couldn't possibly have written it because she was a woman.
She's a woman, yeah.
But the lack of imagination in how to get your needs met. You know, and I can talk about how easy it is to kill people in video games, and guns are pretty easy. I mean, it is a toxic brew that is happening right now.
I often take another position on video games. I gotta say, as somebody who grew up playing them and grew up playing first shooter games, to me, it did not teach me to dehumanize people. It taught me, you know, hand-eye coordination, and I like video games. That's not what we're going to talk about this morning. I swear. So, dear listener, you can call on in. 503-231-8187 is the number to call, and you can join us here on Positively Revolting as we talk about violence against women, as we talk about rape culture, and as we talk about how we can personally affect it, what we are doing
in a positively revolting kind of way
to transform this, because I think that is in fact always important. We always need to have an eye to our solutions,
creative, imaginative solutions.
Indeed.
What would those be? Exactly. We're asking you this morning. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Now is the time to do it. It's better to do it now than at 8:50. Let me just say, if you can get your thoughts together, have a little sip of coffee, and go on from there.
There's a couple of articles. I mean, you know, let's just say, we are rife with articles.
Well, and I'm very happy about that this is making a discussion, but I'm tired of having had to have so many people be killed before to continue the discussion.
So there's an article on Raw Story, and it is entitled Masculine Insecurity and Entitlement Are a Big Tangled Up Mess. It's by Amanda Marcotte, and looking at, you know, this most recent mass shootings, she looks at it and says, being constantly told by virtue of being a white dude that you were supposed to be smarter, more sexually powerful, funnier, etc., than everyone else can have a very different effect than trumping up your prowess. She goes on to write, she thinks that the Rogers situation makes that abundantly clear. She says a lot of white guys look around and realize that they aren't all that smart, sexually masterful, etc. And they're hit with this profound insecurity because they aren't what they are supposed to be, according to what our toxic culture continuously pumps their direction. And I think that that's an interesting thing to think about. Again, not letting anyone off the hook. We all have responsibilities for our action. But sometimes when we talk about ending patriarchy and transforming our culture to being one that respects women, we hear, but what about the men? As if patriarchy is helpful or healthy to anyone. It's not, right? It actually hurts all genders to be stuck in these rigid, socially reinforced confinements because no one is like their gender stereotype, right?
Hopefully.
And so, excellent point, Lynn.
Thank you very much.
And so as we see that we are outside of what we're told is our cultural norm that no one really fits into, you know, it triggers our own insecurities. It triggers our own self, you know, our inner critics, oppressors, judges. It does, in fact, hurt us all. As patriarchy teaches men not to be vulnerable, as it teaches men to distance themselves from their feelings, as it teaches men to distance themselves from their relationships and from, you know, things that are actually meaningful. So that I want to say is a part of this discussion as well. Patriarchy mm-hmm. hurts
everybody.
Let's go ahead.
I'm not a feminist. I like men. That one just blows the top of my head off. I'm not even going to discuss it because we're going to go to a caller. Mary, good morning.
Hello. Yes. What have you to say this morning? I want to say thank you for having this topic because it's been on my mind a lot since the events happened in Santa Barbara. And I'm wondering, first, I want to say I am probably the most left-wing feminist in Oregon, just to give you an idea of where I'm coming from.
All right.
But I think of this as an opportunity to, quote, get a handle on this water that we swim in. And I love that expression. I'm going to try to develop that in my head for a while. But this man named, his last name was Rogers.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking if there's some way we can use his situation to help people describe what's going on in our society. And I don't like to acknowledge him in a positive way, like he's a hero, but kind of turn it around. If we turn his name around, for instance, and said G-E-R-O-S, ism. In other words, I'm sorry this isn't very clear. I haven't really thought it through yet, but the publicity that he has gained by showing the world what goes on in a lot of these misogynist brains, and most of them are male, but do you see what I'm trying to get at? I'd like to use his experience as a way to get a new phrase in our lexicon so that we don't have to keep saying domestic violence and rape culture over and over again. We can point to an actual historic event that manifests all of this attitude at once in time. I mean, it's...
So you're sort of looking at this as sort of a watershed event that we can... Mm-hmm. I agree that we probably could use a turning point. I mean, yeah. That said, there are so many. And yeah, this kid's the latest. A year ago, 2 years ago, there were other things that were horrific that shocked the conscience. The Steubenville rape case, the rape case in India, the stories ad nauseum that we've been talking about, and none of those served as a watershed event that we could turn things around on. What would make this different?
Well, that's what I'm hungry for.
Right. You know, we're all hungry for that difference. Yeah.
I'm starving.
Well,
I
you know,
feel
things
like I'm disappearing here.
I hear you. I totally hear you.
Well, but Mary, these things go bit by bit. It goes, you know, a rock has water falling on it, and eventually, what's the word I want to use for that? Or the way this is just going to be. This is another incident, and people are talking about it. But it's I don't know. We're always looking for one dramatic piece that's going to
make a difference.
Make a difference, and I think this has in its way. But what I abhor, and it's also it's made the discussion come up, but it's also made women way more afraid.
That kind of reminds
two steps
me
forward,
of an event
how many steps back, right?
In April, we had our annual Take Back the Night march here in Forest Grove at Pacific University. And it really did my heart good to see about 50 young people. You know, I'm old. I'm 66. And to see these young people come out and crave, publicly crave safety. And go ahead.
No, I agree, and that's...
Do we need to take back the night every single damn night?
I mean, yeah.
Yes, actually, night. I think that might be part of our solution. That again, looking at violence against women, it thrives because we are enculturated to it, because we are invisible in that paradigm, right? We are just the objects upon which...
Right.
Violence is enacted, or control is enacted. So with that, what can we do to make our reality visible, to make our lives visible, to make these hidden issues, really, to bring them to light, to get out there and talk about working with men as allies? You know, how do we encourage men to do the right thing in ending this oppressive violence? How do we get men to step forward and say, it's okay to be vulnerable, I'm vulnerable, and to put that message out there that entitlement is sort of a violence of their own psyche, right? Because it sets them up for constant disappointment and failure.
What about making it mandatory or womanatory?
Required.
To have every college student read Rogers' Manifesto and study it and realize how
I don't want to give him that much publicity. I think perhaps something that's a little more positive.
A synthesis of it or something, because we have to get this out of the shadow.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Let everybody, the spotlight shine on it for everyone.
Well, so there's an article from Jezebel that I want to credit Kathleen Stevenson, our amazing news and public affairs director for
Thank
the
you,
mornings,
Kathleen.
Sent our way.
I love Kathleen.
We all love Kathleen. Sorry. It's so, yeah, praise Kathleen moment. But she sent us an article from Jezebel, Lessons from a Day Spent with the U.S. UCSB Shooter's Awful Friends. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why what you're saying isn't going to work right now in this milieu. That is because there are a lot of men that would not read those things, men who are in college, would not read his manifestos and his see his YouTube videos and all of that, and say, wow, that guy was sick.
Well,
they would
to go back to middle school? You
no,
know,
I
when
think
these
we have to start.
Hormones are raging and all that.
Well, yeah, we have to start actually younger than that. I mean, this is just this needs to be the new water, right? That it's okay to not be quote a boy, right? Or a, quote, girl. It's okay to be fully human and to recognize that we have strength sometimes, that we are vulnerable sometimes, that we feel attractive and brilliant sometimes, that we feel kind of, you know, shy, awkward, and bashful sometimes, that these things are all a part of a normal experience. That, right. I think, is going to do wonders for actually allowing us to be healthy, you know, in our own bodies and in our own world.
You're right.
And do not ever watch Fox News.
Well, okay.
It's a whole new sexuality. A whole new sexuality.
Well, and so many kids get that.
And I want to say publicly that I am so grateful for all of the effort on the part of the gay community and transgender and inquiring and confused and whatever it is, that we are bringing these issues out into the open and discussing and analyzing and, you know, demanding answers and explaining things in new ways. And I never thought that I would see this in my lifetime. And it is so refreshing. I just love seeing people come out. You know, they're just expressing themselves in new ways and dressing differently and talking differently, and it's right. Okay. They're, you know, it's
well. So there is some real good positive steps. There's growth, and let's encourage that growth to flourish and go wild.
Indeed.
Thank you so much for your call, Mary.
Thank you again.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You take care.
Should we move on to our next call?
Let's. It's 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. We are Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we encourage your calls at 503-231-8187. We are talking about violence against women this morning. We are talking about what we can do personally to make a difference in our lives and in the world around us. There are so many horrific examples. Over the last year, over the last 2 years, there's the examples of last weekend. There's all manner of things globally. There's, in fact, I'm not even going to go there yet. Okay, so, but I also want to encourage you to check out our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook where we are Positively Revolting. And go ahead and like us and keep following conversations throughout the week. We do post things there, kind of sporadically. But
there's a couple of good Matt Boers cartoons on this issue, right on.
And also you can contact us through our email, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com.
You know, Teresa Mitchell sent us a little thing.
Did she?
As she often does. This was Glenn Beck mocking the sexual assault response from what happened in Santa Barbara. So I'm not suggesting that anyone even look at it, because guess what he's got on? A hoodie. I know.
Yeah, there's just...
So it's that whole, you know, my sweetie said when this happened, he goes, oh, the Fox News white privileged men as the victims idea has once again... I won't say triumph, but it's raised its ugly head. And they perpetuate that all the time. And there's other media things that perpetuate that. And turn off your TV. It's always my advice. But you can, of course, get it anywhere you want. But anyway, let's go to our next caller. Anne,
are you
there?
Yes, I'm there. Hi.
Excellent. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Listen, you know, I think it's very good to examine these things in an emotional context and, you know, a sociological context. But I'm much more, you know, involved with policy. And particularly, I want to talk about an aspect of the Elliot Rodgers situation, which is the police. You know, these are men, mainly men, who we pay to do, to protect and serve us. But they went to his apartment.
Right.
They spoke with him, and he was able to convince them that his misogynistic rants were not a matter of a psychiatric problem. And the thing is that this is the way the police think. If it had been a woman, I have no doubt that she would have been transported to a psychiatric evaluation. I think that these are guys who are on the public payroll. So we could start by addressing their misogyny.
Well, and they shouldn't be. They are not really qualified to make psychiatric evaluation. That's another issue that should not be something.
No, absolutely not.
That
exactly.
A police officer is doing.
Yeah, that's something that we should work on because women are mainly, especially women of color and lesbians, are mainly targeted a lot of times by these policies. But that's a huge issue. But I think that, you know, we should talk in terms of what happened there and why are the newspapers and the media totally ignoring the psychiatric aspect when, you know, when they usually emphasize that, right? So in this case, they don't want to show that the police were wrong, so we don't hear anything. Not that I listen to much.
Well, what I heard was that, you know, his parents, his mother was, you know, calling and asking for help, saying that he was going to do something violent. And and of course, you know, what, as you said, they talked him he talked them out of it. But then the police said, oh, this is if only his parents had done something more, this is a psychological problem, which I found interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. And slightly inaccurate.
All right. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for your comment, Anne.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to say that whatever the police say, the problem is the media not delving. So thank you.
That too. It's a toxic brew, as we stated earlier.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's go ahead and saunter forth. The bases are loaded, 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
And Raquel. Good morning. Oh, I'm sorry. Franny.
Good morning, Franny.
I didn't read. Franny. Hello,
Franny. I'm going to call myself Raquel.
Okay, you can call yourself whatever you want.
Great topic. I wanted to just say something briefly that I think feminism needs a major resurgence. And, you know, in my lifetime, I'm sorry to see the term Ms. go out the window almost completely. And I think women and men need to begin with a new feminist movement, resuscitating the old one and also creating new strategies for feminism.
Yeah.
And I think that will go a long way toward putting down rape culture.
Well, I think that there are feminist movements, but there are some pretty fundamental ideological disagreements within the feminist movement, and there always has been. But I feel like they are sort of coming into a sharper focus. It seems like so much is coming into a sharper focus in that we have to have new understanding of what feminism is. We have to grow and evolve as a movement. And a goodly part of that is being very aware of gender identity. It's being very aware of sexual orientation. And it's getting past a lot of the second wave feminism that was really short-sighted in these areas. Also, we need to be smarter about intersectionality because, you know, when I was, say, a nice women's studies student back in college 25 years ago, there was definitely, you know, the radical feminists understood intersectionality. Socialist feminists understood a lot of intersectionality. Liberal feminists, of which there are, I would say that is still the, you know, more common, milieu for feminism, don't understand that intersectionality.
So for folks out there that might be in the Stone Age,
what
would intersectionality
be? Went back to school for a minute. It's how oppressions reinforce each other. And so I think it's extremely important. I think that liberal feminism, which again is the broadest force in the movement, really missed the boat in looking at how class and race and other issues all reinforce each other and need to be sort of looked at as a whole.
Right, and you have to know about class and race for that to be something
right.
you can do.
Right, because otherwise you end up, you know, saying things that kind of will prove that you have an entitled limited experience, like you're just pushing for the glass ceiling to be, you know, it's things like that kind of drive me crazy. But as a revolutionary force, yes, feminism needs to revitalize itself, ourselves, and we need to, again, get past those previous blinders.
Yeah, I think we need to get past those differences, and I think we need to just speak in broad terms as well about the fact that in any culture and in any race, in any place in the world, women are the most oppressed. So women are the most oppressed class, race, whatever. And, you know, I think that that needs to be talked about because that's such an obvious thing. And I think the, you know, the liberal feminists, as you call them, I think they need to get on board. And how about, you know, stop taking your husband's name? You know, things like that that are just sort of basic that everybody just does. I mean, I know so many people who were women's studies majors who got married, took their husband's name, gave the kids the husband's name, that kind of thing. I mean, that's
right,
you know,
right, right. To be very aware of how
the culture
we are
of chattel.
Yeah,
you know, women as chattel, and
yep.
You know, I think that
absolutely.
Too. You know, people just need to. I don't know. People
maybe
just,
unless you like your husband's name better or something.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Actually, I mean, I, and this, you know, I'm not interested in judging our fellow sisters about things like that either. But, and, you know, well, for me, I think marriage is state-sponsored prostitution. But that's just me.
Right.
If people
I mean,
want to do it.
I'm not judging them. I'm not judging them. I'm just saying these things are so ingrained
right, right,
in culture.
Right.
That no,
no Franny, I'm hearing you.
Anymore.
I think that what you're talking about is actually becoming aware in all of this very subtle, and again, I know air quotes don't work on the radio, but I'll just point out what I'm using them because it seems to be a morning for air quotes, that all of the more subtle ways that we reinforce the message that women are property.
Right, because then, and this is the last thing I'll say, because then that's inextricably linked, if you ask me, with rape culture.
Yes.
It's all mixed up together. So
yep.
Anyway, I'll let you go. Thank you.
Hey,
you're very
thank
welcome.
You very much.
Thanks.
So we have Raquel on the line.
We do.
Good morning, Raquel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I feel really called to actually bring Mother Teresa in after that last little thread, because I really appreciated the impact this one woman had, who maybe didn't display a lot of those ideologically strong feminist points, you know, and when she was asked to march against the war in Vietnam, she declined respectfully mm-hmm. and expressed that she would stand and walk for a walk of peace. And I would love to see this attitude come back or come to feminism, because if all of our sisters in their diversity, which if matriarchy appreciates one thing, it is diversity, it values that. It understands the strength of diversity in our nature and that we're part of the earth in that way, part of the ecosystem, no matter what cultural condition or nationally relevant, you know, circumstance we're in, we are part of nature, and nature thrives on diversity. And in that diversity, there's going to be this extraordinary expression, this range of feminine being, both in the women and the men. And when we appreciate and stand for what we believe in and stand for what all of us believe in, regardless of whether we want to get married and take our husband's name or express ourselves in a, you know, queer gender ideology, whatever that is, if we're standing for what we believe in and respecting one another, there is in that the potential to really shift this culture of violence. Because, you know, these are perpetuating conditions, and we are needing to address them from the beginning. We learn from the beginning, we learn through those impressions, even pre-linguistically, and as we develop, you know, even fumbling through adolescence, the way that a young girl treats herself and represents herself and interacts with those young boys, we're shaping the future. We're shaping the men and women, the mothers and fathers, and the brothers and sister elders to come. And by addressing those places of value, equality, and really grabbing self-loathing by the horns, you know, which has been, I think, just a byproduct of repression, is to self-loathe. You know, that I'm somebody who works in healing. I work with women. I work at birth and empowerment. And one of my earliest memories is thinking I was really, really unfortunate to not be born a male, because I didn't have the privilege that even I could see in my five-year-old level of being that the boys had. And I've had to take responsibility for that self-imposed sexual violence, where I am perpetuating any degree of that violence that I'm seeing on the outside and I'm finding revolting, through my own self-loathing, through my own perceived self-limits. And with each act of each woman, in a non-hysterical, I mean, hysteria, I think, is really like rage. It's a symptom of this being owned through generations,
sure,
this condition of just...
Well, and I want to throw in there that being hysterical is, in fact, something that really only applies to women in our culture, language-wise. And, in fact, it is tied to the uterus in its etiology. And I...
Used to be a hanging offense.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there. It's, yeah, an interesting word.
Well, it was a hanging offense because it was this, like, ultimate expression of women feeling repressed.
Mm-hmm.
And when we as women, you know, like, we can look at policy, it's very important. We can look at conditioning and education and family values. All of that's really important. And it also starts in us, because, you know, forgive our mothers for the conditions that they grew in, and we can go back many generations. We're here now, and we have a responsibility to resolve that. To resolve and appreciate that those hysterical aspects of our own, even if we're super controlled and we don't ever express that, each woman on earth still feels that, knowing of the violence against women that's happening everywhere. Even if you are one of that 25% of us statistically who hasn't experienced rape or violence, we have a rage about it. And when we can hold that rage as this incredible indicator, just like any other difficult emotion,
Raquel,
we can impact change. And I'd love to see us looking at that more and finding the actual solutions to this.
Finding the actual solutions. It's what we're all about. Thank you so much for your call, Raquel, and for contributing to the conversation. We have only about 15 minutes left, a little bit more, but not so much. We'll call it 15 minutes. Go ahead and give us a ring now, 503-231-8187. That is the number to give us a ring. You can also like us on Facebook, where I have to say we're two people shy of having 400 fans on our Facebook page.
So, come on, people, you can do it for us.
You can find us on Facebook, where we are Positively Revolting. And you can also email us, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this is actually the last program that we are producing until September, as we are taking a little summer vacation.
See you in September. Sorry. Everything is musical for me lately. I think that's a good thing, but not everyone does. So I won't make the entire all of our listeners
listen.
You're
welcome. Well, you know, it's not so much about your singing as about the fact that here we are talking about rape culture, mm-hmm, and violence against women. And it is it's a topic that, again, is not going away anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And we really would like it to, though. And so how do we start to counteract it? How do we continue our work to draw attention to it?
And I, as Raquel seemed to point out, my impression was she was talking about it being kind of an inside job about that. But I think it's two-pronged. There are policies. There are tons of external things going on. And for both men and women, there are lots of internal issues. And everything has to be looked at. It's not And there's just never, to me, one solution to everything.
One of my favorite books on the topic is an old book now, written from, about the time I was in college.
Oh.
Old book now.
Oh,
Suzanne,
when there were printing presses. Okay.
We did. We had printed page. Suzanne Farr wrote a book called Homophobia as a Weapon of Sexism. And she talks really, she was rather prescient about the ways that sexism, in fact, hurts everyone and how it reinforces, it is reinforced by and it reinforces homophobia. She asks, or she makes these observations that if, in fact, we get through this world of rabid patriarchy, of one up, one down, of this is what a girl is and this is what a boy is, and never the twain shall meet, that she says this will be some of the positive outcomes. Kids won't be called tomboys or sissies. They'll just be who they are, able to do what they wish. People will be able to love anyone, no matter what the gender is. The issue will simply be whether or not that person is a good human being, compatible and loving. Affection will be opened up between women and men. It will also be opened up between women and women and men and men. It won't be centered on sex. There won't be a fear of being called names if, in fact, you are rather close to a good friend who happens to be of the same gender. If affection is opened up, then isolation is broken down for all of us, especially for those who generally experience little physical affection, such as unmarried older people.
That is a revolution that could bring down capitalism.
Women will be able to work at whatever jobs we would like to without being labeled unwomanly or unfeminine. There will be less violence if men do not feel they have to prove and assert their manhood. Their desire to dominate and control will not spill over from their personal level to the level of national and international politics and the use of bigger and better weapons to control countries. People will be able to wear whatever clothing they wish, with the priority being comfort rather than the display of their femininity or masculinity. And finally, there will be no more gender roles. I just want to throw that out there this morning because that is, I think, again, one of the cruxes of the biscuit, as it were.
That is a revolutionary concept that she is talking about.
Indeed, and a concept I'd like to promote all the heck over the place. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who do we have next?
Hey, how about Ron?
Okay, good morning, Ron. You're on the air.
Ah, finally. I think that in this society in particular, in the world in general, we promote hate and violence. I mean, religion has promoted it for years. You know, the things that happen in India are because of their traditions and their religion. You know, like the thing where the girl was just stoned by her parents,
right,
and her family. And then in this particular country, we introduced an idea that life is a game, and that whole idea tends to objectify human beings. As now we're pieces on a board or something, you know. And I think we need to get away from trying to. I mean, you know, we institutionalize ignorance and hatred. You know, I mean, violence. You know, because we now, you know, the thing with the Columbine boys, they were reactionary. They were reacting to the religious kids that had, you know, would talk about them, and so they were reacting to them, and that's why, you know, one of them went up and asked the girl before he killed her, "Are you Christian?" We need to just stop playing games with each other. I know the psychologists, you know, might lose some jobs, but we need to stop playing games with each other and just start learning how to look at each other like human beings and start practicing that and treating each other that way. And that's basically about all I have to say about it.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Ron.
So I thought I'd let people know what's coming up on KBO this morning at 9 on Political Perspectives. Host Per Fagerin speaks with writer Allison Weir about her new book, Against Our Better Judgment, The Hidden History of How the United States Was Used to Create Israel. At 9:30, Jenka Soderberg speaks with Craig Corey about his family's appeal of an Israeli verdict ruling that the government was not responsible for the death of his daughter, Rachel Corey. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints ask, was the Egyptian election rigged? Also, a group of Nobel laureates question whether Human Rights Watch has been infiltrated and watered down by its close connections to the U.S. State Department, and a report from the electronic Intifada. I'm suddenly thinking eggs. I don't know. At 11 o'clock on Radio Zine, host Bruce Silverman marks today as an important day in KABU's proto-history, 1964 through 1968. Learn about KABU's earliest days, why the station was created, who was involved, and how we got our call letters and our first tiny-weeny transmitter. At 11:30, Megan Murphy, founder and editor of the website Feminist Current, talks about the killings committed by Elliot Rodger and the misogynistic cultural messages we see today. Thank you, KABU members, for your generous support. If you are not a member currently, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Yeah, take care of that.
Yeah.
503-231, excuse me, 8187, the number to call.
Let's try to fit in Gordon.
Good morning, Gordon. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hopefully I don't sound like an ass here.
That'll be up to you, Gordon.
I've got a nice one, but hopefully I don't look like one today or sound like one. But the thing is that I'm all about the feminism. I'm all about seeing the women be empowered and getting out of this rape culture. And I believe that, you know, this stuff goes down into the religion. It comes into the media. You know, Disney is a key proponent of this. He perpetuates this this gross rape culture through his Disney movies. Really, the media, I was talking to some people the other day, can you imagine if the media turned sustainable and green and healthy, sexually healthy for people, and we can manipulate 300 million people into doing the right thing all the time just by changing the way the media works? But the thing I wanted to say is that feminism, I want us to be careful with feminism, because I personally believe that feminism failed our children the first time it came around, because I don't think people had a grasp and to get a grip on the amount of energy that they were putting towards their own independence and individuality. And I feel that because I am the direct result of a feminist woman who failed me as a mother. And I believe part of the problem was capitalism and forcing her out of the home as a single parent, as right. My father was murdered in Vietnam. So what I'm saying is, if we do this feminism again and we try this again, I do believe that it's important that the women do understand their roles and the positions and how important it is for the mother to be there and the child.
All right, I'm going to start addressing a couple of your points. So,
sure.
And I know you don't want to sound like an ass. That's cool. What I have to say is, yeah, let's look at capitalism. Let's not look at feminism for a moment. Because, yeah, feminism, first of all, it's not like when we do this feminist thing again. Feminism has been a continued movement. It has had ebbs and flows. But it's not like, oh, yeah, let's pick this back up. No, it's, in fact, let's grow as a movement. Let's evolve our thinking. Let's actually gain new perspective. But what failed you is capitalism. And I want to point out that unless we have actual safety nets that will support families, when you have when you're involved in an imperialist capitalist state that sends folks off to war to be killed and then doesn't offer living support to the families left behind, and you got a single parent and they have to do something, yeah, right? That's what actually is causing a lack of attention. It's not because your mother decided not to be used as a dishmat. I also want to say that parenting is tricky work, right? I don't think the parents that raised me did a particularly, bad job, but neither do I think that that my adopted mom was a really good parent. She had issues, right? People have issues. And therapy is not a bad thing. That doesn't have anything to do with feminism. You know, the woman that raised me sure didn't consider herself a feminist in any way, was a stay-at-home mom, so she could devote all of her time to me. That wasn't healthy either. So I just want to put it out there.
A woman going to a corporate office and making six digits a year because she feels empowered and she wants to run this UTO, and then she has her three children at home at babysitters while she's not even at home anymore because she's out making this, you know.
And what if a man did that?
That's kind of, that's what I'm talking about.
And what if a man did that?
Well, and the men need to stop that too, and that's why we can go back.
Right, so it's really not about feminism. It's really about looking at what our responsibilities are to family, how we make our way in the world, and capitalism.
Sure, sure. So really changing capitalism and media is the ultimate way that we have to change the way money works. We've got to destroy...
That would be a good thing, too. But right now we're talking about violence against women. So sure, I'm going to get back to that topic, and I thank you very much for your call, Gordon. And with our last remaining moments, who do we have?
We have Harry.
We have Harry. Good morning, Harry. You're on the air. We have Annalise. Good morning, Annalisa. You're on the air. Oh, we have dial tones.
I just like to...
Good morning, Annalisa.
There's Annalisa.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just like to end this with a little positive thing. I was in a restaurant, and I was there, and there was one other person there, and it happened to be a man. And we had our food, I guess. I wasn't sitting close to him. But anyway, we got our bills, or I got my bill, and I turned it over, and it was not my food that I had eaten. So I told the person, the server, that I had the wrong bill, and then she walked over to his table and took that bill, and that was mine. Anyway, when I was ready to pay, I put my money on the table, and the server said, "Oh, you're good, hon." And I said, what? You know, I didn't understand it right away. And she said, "Oh, the gentleman paid for you." And so that was such a friendly gesture that hasn't happened to me in a long, long time, that I will be really, really thinking about that, how this man, because I had the wrong tab and he had the wrong tab, and then when I told the server that it wasn't my bill, and then he paid for my meal.
Okay. So, I'm not entirely sure how that relates to violence against women, but we are damn near out of time. So,
no, well,
did you have a
well, of course, these horrible tragedies, it's horrific.
So this was so it's just kind of a little gift, and that's a nice thing.
And so, yeah, so once in a while there is this gentle thing that can really lift your spirits.
Okay, thanks, Annalisa.
I'm going to ungender that for a moment. If, in fact, we have a couple of people sitting around and one person feels a bit able to, you know, one person has a bit of money and decides, "Oh, I'm going to pick up the tab for that table over there because, you know, whatever. Our bills got mixed up. Oh, wacky day, sign from the universe." That's cool, regardless of the gender, right? When men habitually pick up the tab, that's
power.
Back to chattel. That's back to the fact that we are owned, we are property, and we rely on their largesse. So it's a tricky situation. It's a tricky situation. You know, I don't bat men out of the way when I'm trying to get through a door anymore. I used to get really offended having doors open for me, and I would sort of shove through and be like, "I can do this myself." I don't do that anymore because, in fact, I like to hold doors open for people. I go through doors when other people hold them
open
for me.
You're just growing up all the time,
you know,
Ani.
But I will say that occasionally when I get to the door first and I hold it open, men refuse to walk through it. Still, today, really? 2014, I've had this experience last month. They will take it from me and say, "Oh, after you."
It's
still
a lot to unlearn.
And so... And that's exactly what this is. It's an unlearning process, and it's going to take us lifetimes. It's going to take us generations, because it didn't happen overnight. But it takes people of good heart, good intention, and wide open eyes talking about these things with each other. And
yes,
that is how we transform society. That's how we transform culture.
That would be positively revolting.
That's how we end violence against women. All right. So with that, we make way. And we'll see you.
Have a great summer, folks.
In September.
Because we're going to. Bye.
Bye. You can always stay in touch on Facebook and Gmail. Positively revolting. Thanks so much. Take care.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Community Radio is proud to celebrate International Children's Day with Visegrad Group PDX on Sunday, June 1st from 1:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Brentwood Darlington Community Center, 7211 Southeast 62nd Avenue in Portland. We will celebrate children from around the world and honor the diverse cultures that exist and thrive in the Portland area. The International Children's Day festivities will offer a rich intercultural program that will include singing, acting, puppet shows, arts and crafts, and ethnic food. Again, that's International Children's Day with Visegrad Group PDX on Sunday, June 1st from 1:30 p.m. to 5 at the Brentwood Darlington Community Center, 7211 Southeast 62nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.